everyone. Welcome to Big League Dreaming, the podcast, the show about fulfilling your dreams and taking it to the next level. We really appreciate you turning in this week, just today. Whenever you get a chance to tune in, we really do appreciate you being on the show. If you're new to Big League Dreaming, the podcast, as I said, it's a podcast about fulfilling your dreams and taking it to the next level. It's hosted by a dad and his three sons. I'm the dad, John Gonzalez, and joining us on the show, you have all three sons, by the way, folks. It is the oldest son, son number one, Zach Gonzalez from Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing, Zach?
Doing well. Fired up.
Fired up. There you go. Son number two is around as well. He's in the Grand Rapids area like me. How you doing, Ty?
Doing great. I'm ready for another great episode today. Season three has been great, so I'm pumped.
Yeah, season three has been a lot of fun. We've been doing some new podcasts for you. Hopefully you've been checking them out. And then Zane is son number three. He's down in South Bend. How you doing, Zane?
What's up? What's up? Happy to be here.
All right. Wow, this is great. The whole crew is here on today's podcast. And folks, we have a great podcast for you, a great guest, by the way. We can't wait to introduce you to him. But if you're a fan of college baseball, you definitely want to stick around for this one. On Big League Dreaming, the podcast, we like to cover all aspects of baseball. We'll talk a little bit about our personal experiences. All three of the sons, all three of my boys have played college baseball at some level. One is still coaching in the game, so that's great to hear. But it's a podcast that we talk to coaches, players, professionals. We've had on broadcasters. We all talk about all facets of the game. We go everywhere from Little League Baseball. Yes, we followed a team all the way to the Little League World Series, to college baseball, to minor leagues, to the major league level as well. Basically, we just have fun, right, guys?
That's right.
Yep.
All right, let's get to our first our guest for today's show. Zach, why don't you introduce him?
Yeah, very thankful to have Nick Schnabel coming in. Coach Schnabel from Clemson University. Coach, first of all, congrats on the new job going down to South Carolina from Michigan. So I know you're excited to get going that first season down there, huh?
Yeah, we are. And again, thanks for having me, guys. It's really cool, this podcast and how you guys do it. So honored to be with you, but yeah, certainly fired up to be here at Clemson and with the season right around the corner. So yeah, we are looking forward to it.
Yeah, we do.
Like 17 days, right, Dad? Until
it's right around the corner, right?
The arms are getting loose. They're stretching out the starters. It's got to be pumped up, those guys right now.
Yeah, it's nice to actually get on a field in January again too. We just opened up this Friday with our official team training and was able to scrimmage outside all 3 days. Beautiful weather, so yeah, it was really good.
Zane's shaking his head down there.
Yeah, I'm beyond jealous. We've got outside a total of like two times, and it was real feel like 36. And me, the pitching coach, was like, "All right, like yeah, let's do it. We can try it." But yeah, I'm beyond jealous. We've been stuck inside doing lives in cages. So, but I know how you know how that feels.
I sure do. 10 whole years of it. So, yeah.
You mentioned 10 whole years of it. Obviously, your time in Michigan with Coach Backovich, and it was a good time for you. You guys had a great run, a lot of success. I think, why do you think people were so surprised, Coach, that Michigan, being a northern school, had so much success? I mean, that seemed to be like the topic of conversation throughout college baseball, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly with the weather and the climate, it makes it a little bit more difficult. But it is what it is, and you know, we just kind of attacked it and found the right kids that wanted to be a part of our program, and very fortunate for my time at Michigan and being a small piece of what we were able to accomplish. And it was a special 10 years.
I know all the guys have different questions for you, so I guess we'll go right to Zach, and we'll go in birth order, if that's okay with you, Coach.
Sounds good.
All right, Zach, take it away.
Yeah, Coach. So I guess I want to get into the technical nerdy stuff on the side of baseball. So what I'm really interested in is kind of technology in baseball and how it has progressed over the years. I mean, you played yourself, you've coached, Division I for a really long time. How has it evolved to where it is today? I mean, Now, like, we've always had the video coordinator, right, on all the teams that we had, but now we have like TrackMan, Rapsodo. What are some of like the tools and resources Clemson's going to have this year?
Yeah, certainly. You just mentioned a couple of them, TrackMan, Rapsodo. The data, the tech has been a, has been good for our game. I think as coaches, you know, you kind of have to be bilingual in that you need to be able to speak that language, but you also need to be able to speak, compete and approach. And it's like having a pie and there's slices to that pie. Certainly data and tech is a part of those pieces. But, for coaches, you know, the key is to, you know, the old KISS method, right? Keep it simple, stupid, make sure they understand, what you're trying to communicate with that data and things like that, because it just, it is what it is now with kids. They're used to TrackMan, they're used to Rapsodo, they're used to spin rates, right? Exit velos, et cetera. And so, it's important to be able to speak that language, but also be able to speak, you know, like I mentioned, the compete and approach and just kind of some old school baseball stuff.
A lot of times the kids are seeing it at what's going on at the major league level, right? So they're learning all these things, they're training with different tools. And even, you know, these guys all played in the, what years did you guys play? '90s? No, wait, 2000s? I'm getting old. You know, but the tools have changed and all the things that are available. I think Zane had a question about the pro level versus the college level.
Yeah, kind of like what I wanted to hear was like, at the Division I level, kind of what are some of the rumblings that you guys are hearing about like some of the new rules that like pro ball is starting to implement, like the shifts and the bigger bases, and when you think that'll start trickling down, if it will, to the college level? Because here at the NAIA level, like, we're even behind you guys, right? So like, you guys were bat testing in I think 2020 and we were supposed to start it in 21 and they pushed it back. Like, last year was our first year doing that kind of stuff. So we're always a little bit behind you guys. So I like to kind of hear where you guys are at with some of the rules.
Yeah, you already see it starting to trickle down, some of the pace of play things, you know, the 10 seconds for the hitter to be ready to have his front foot in the box, ready to hit, 15 seconds for the pitcher. You know, those things have trickled down from minor league baseball where they've already been implemented. The other stuff with the bigger bases and things, I think, could come within the next couple of years. You know, I definitely see that happening. So, you know, it's a fluid situation. It's evolving with the rules. And that's always an interesting topic at the ABCA convention every year, because you get to hear, let them explain what the new rules are and why they're implementing them. And again, a lot of them have been already implemented in minor league baseball.
Pitch clock, right?
Oh yeah, it's a real thing. I mean, you know, from an offensive standpoint, you want your guys to be under control. The game can start moving fast at times, right? And that's when kids start getting into red lights and not being able to release a pitch. So having a routine and implementing a routine from an offensive standpoint and defensive standpoint, but especially offensive standpoint, it's really important to slow the game down. And now they're trying to make that into a 10-second funnel. And again, it's pretty quick. So it'll be interesting to see this year. Excuse me, I lost my voice. We had a team building activity this weekend. And I lost my voice. But it'll be interesting to see if in fact it does help pace of play. And you know, if position guys can slow the game down like they need to.
Now, are you guys required to have a visible clock? And like, if so, like, who's in charge of managing that clock during the game?
Yeah, I think that's by next year. You're going to have okay. It's mandatory you have that. Typically, I've seen it two different ways in the last couple of years. The third base ump will have a clock and be running it. And then I've seen it to where, you know, wherever you're at, they have people working the clock for them. And I guess the umpires get buzzed when it goes over that. So I've seen it one of two ways, but I do think next year it'll be mandatory to have that visible clock.
Folks, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Big League Dreaming, the podcast. We're talking to Nick Schnabel. Is it Schnabel or Schnabel? I've heard both ways on different podcasts.
Yeah, it's Schnabel.
Okay.
I've been called a lot of things. So Schnabel, whatever. It don't matter.
He is the assistant head coach and recruiting coordinator at Clemson University, the Clemson Tigers. There, he's being rejoined by head coach Eric Bakich. They coached together for 10 years at the University of Michigan, had great success. Coach, you even were named National Assistant Coach of the Year by the ABCA in 2019. That had to be a big thrill for you.
Yeah, it was. I was very honored and humbled. You look at some of the names on that list, and you know, when I was coming up, you know, those are the guys I looked up to and have a ton of respect for. Obviously, that award goes to our whole staff and our players. But it was certainly a humbling award to receive on behalf of all of Team 153.
Well, Coach, I know that Ty and I want to talk a little bit about your playing days, but we'll save that for a couple of seconds because I'm really interested in the talk of what's happening at the collegiate level, especially D1 level today. You as a recruiting coordinator, your job's a little different, but about the same as Zane's. Zane's doing recruiting at the NAI level. You know, you're at the D1 at Clemson. He's at IUSB in South Bend. But I'm just curious about how both of you approach recruiting. So, you know, when you're evaluating players, are you looking at video? Are you looking at are they sending you the information? Are you watching them? Is it several people watching them? And Zane, how does it differ from what he says? So let's find out what Coach says.
Yeah, so from a recruiting standpoint, it's a total team effort. Our entire staff recruits. And yes, we do watch a lot of video. We're sent a lot of emails and with video attached and things like that. I think the biggest thing for us in recruiting, and I think this goes for any level, but it all goes back to people and relationships and, talking with a lot of people and investing a lot of time that way. Certainly we go out and watch them, and what we're looking for are athletes from a position player standpoint, guys that can shrink the field defensively and can be multiple offensively. More importantly though, we're looking for the right kind of dudes. We want guys that want to get better. They want to improve. They want to be great teammates. And they want to get a great education here at Clemson. There's a lot more things to it, but in a nutshell, that's kind of how it works.
Zane, there's that term, dudes, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, for us, it's definitely very similar, but also very different, right? Like at the NAI level, you know, we only have one full-time coach and that's the head coach. So, I mean, for us, it's completely different because we don't have people to send out to go see. And that's what he was talking about. The connections become so important for us, you know, calling coaches, talking to them, even our own players are great recruiting tools for us because they're like, hey, I got this buddy that I played with, you know, he's at a junior college. He's thinking about transferring. I think he'd like it here. You know, it just comes back to connections are so important at this level and staying in contact with other coaches and hearing what else is out there. I mean, if we know someone is in that area, then like whether it's a family friend or whatever, like, hey, go watch this kid. I've done that to you, Dad. Like, hey, go check out this game. Yeah. Go watch this kid. Let me know what he's like. So, I mean, that's kind of where it's similar, but we just don't have that, you know, huge recruiting budget or pretty much any recruiting budget. It's kind of us just boots on the ground, go get it done.
And I would imagine different players fit at different universities for different opportunities, right, Coach? I mean, what might be good for one athlete, you know, playing at Clemson might be different for another athlete to play at IUSB.
No question. And at the end of the day, this is a two-way street, and we need it to work for both parties. And that's why in the recruiting process for us, there's never any pressure. There's never any deadlines. We want them pumping their fist out the window so fired up they're coming to Clemson that they can't stand it. And, you know, the last thing we want is guys to commit or guys to get here and be like, oh man, this isn't what I want. You know, then they leave and it's not good. So just try to do as much as that on the front end, honest, transparent, straight up. And yeah, sometimes it's not a good fit and that's okay. And then hopefully we're finding, again, like I said, the right guys.
Well, Coach, I think there's one thing in common between all of us, and you're probably going to laugh when I say this. You played your minor league ball when you played in the Expo system. Yes. Did you play for Clinton?
Well, yeah, parts of two seasons. Oh, yeah, the old dog manufacturing plant out there. I still remember that smell.
what league was that? What league was that?
That was the Midwest League at the time. The years I was there, I don't, maybe 01 and a little bit of 02, but Jason Babe was with us in 01, who went on to have a wonderful major league career. But yeah, Clinton, Iowa, sure was. I was there.
We're based here in Grand Rapids, which is home of the West Michigan Whitecaps.
Sure.
You probably have spent a few innings here, right?
Yeah, I remember vividly losing a game on a bunt. I was playing third base, threw it up the line, and run scored. Thanks.
Yep. Todd, you probably cheered, right?
Yeah.
Tough What's place that? To play, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Ty, you wanted to ask Coach about those playing days. You got a good intro right there, buddy.
Yeah, I was just like, I basically just wanted to know like a good minor league story or like a funny story or just your minor league experience overall, like just something good from the minors.
Yeah. Oh, good question. Well, first off, I was just an organizational guy, right? Utility infielder. So felt very fortunate to play 4 years. There was a lot of them. I would say just probably the 2002 season, spending most of that season in Harrisburg, which was our Double-A affiliate. Tommy John was our pitching coach. I think that season, 19 different big leaguers passed through Harrisburg, and Brandon Phillips was on the team. Cliff Lee was on the team as the fifth starter, you know, and we lost in the Eastern League finals that year. But that was a pretty special summer for a nobody, not very good player like me to look back and say, yeah, that was pretty cool. But the Expos at the time didn't have a lot of money, but was a wonderful organization in their scouting. You know, you look at some of those great Montreal Expos players and the Vladdies and the, you know, Pedro Martinez's and all, just countless. So it was a wonderful franchise, and just they were fighting, you know, from a money standpoint, but it was a pretty cool 4 years.
Well, Coach, I mean, you obviously called yourself an organizational player. So this show is about, you know, dreams, right? It's big league dreaming and we all have them, you know, you're yep. as a kid growing up. I mean, you got to be drafted even though it was like the 30th round, right? I mean, that's okay. You got drafted, you got a chance to play, you know, but yeah. when did you get to that point where you kind of like, I don't know where this is going?
Yeah, so August 26, 2003, I had labrum surgery on my left shoulder, and it wasn't career threatening by any stretch, but I had moved 7 times, I think, that year, up and down, and which I was fine with. You know, I was a team guy. I just wanted to play and felt grateful to have an opportunity to play baseball. But it got to a point where I thought I could probably do more for others than I could myself in that career. And about a week after I had surgery, I got a call from Randy Mazey, who was the head coach at East Carolina at the time. And he had recruited me to East Carolina to play there years before and had an opening to get into coaching. And, you know, I felt like it was kind of the right time, and it was just kind of the fate of it. And you know, so I got into coaching and, you know, haven't looked back.
And you coach back and played there together for a couple of years too, right?
We did. We did. We were both California junior college players, played against each other. And then went out to East Carolina. Didn't even visit East Carolina before we committed. We committed because of the head coach there, Keith LeClaire. All he had done was win in his career, and we wanted to win. And we had 2 years to do it. And so we committed sight unseen, and it was the best decision of our life up until that point. And, yeah, we were teammates there, and I've known Eric over 20 years, and I was in his wedding. He was in mine. Michigan was the first opportunity. You know, I had to work for him and for us to work together. And, again, it just goes – you just want to be around good people, and I know he's good people, and you know, it's been a great ride.
Well, Coach, I also want to ask you, since we're in Michigan and we're Tigers fans, you had a chance to get to know Chris Fetters a little bit.
Yeah, Chris is a stud. We still talk. In fact, talked to him I think about a week ago. Wonderful person, wonderful human being, great family. Very knowledgeable. He's probably the best example of that speaking bilingual that I could come up with. Very intelligent, understands the, you know, all of the tech, all of the data, but can blend it so well. And yes, one of my all-time favorites, and I'm grateful for our time together at Michigan.
I wasn't sure what to expect from him. I mean, obviously the great success that he had with you guys at Michigan spoke a lot, and then obviously his success in pro ball as well. But one thing I noticed about him, I was watching him, I don't now remember who it was, but he commanded attention whenever the camera would go to him, you know, in the dugout or on the mound. He commanded attention and respect from his players, first of all. Like, I saw that. And then watching them just reading it, it looked like they also were soaking it all in. And I'm like, that's a special talent, right? I mean, is that the key to being a good coach?
It is. And I think you just took the words right out of my mouth. When you can build a relationship with whoever you're coaching, you know, and they know that you care about them, not just on the field. I think that goes a long way. And I think that's why he gets the results he does and the respect he does from whoever he's coaching. And as a coach, that's the ultimate goal. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, our payday is to get those wedding invitations in the mail from 3, 4, 5 years after you've stopped coaching them. And that's when you know, like, yep, that was, you know, we did it right there. And so, yeah, you build a relationship. You know, it's like any other business. It all comes down to people and doing the right thing.
Like when it comes to coaching at the D1 level, build like you said, building those relationships is like so important. Would you say that's the most fulfilling thing about your job, or what would you say is the most fulfilling, like most fulfillment you get from coaching the D1 level? Is it seeing a guy break out of a slump? Is it seeing kids get drafted, or
all those things that you mentioned are way up there? You know, getting a hug from a kid and he says, "I love you, coach." That's probably the ultimate. Those wedding invitations are great. You know, and then, you know, winning, being a part of watching kids do something that they'll never forget the rest of their lives. You know, dogpiling to go to Omaha will be etched in my mind forever. And I hope there's another memory or five of those, because they are so special. But watching the kids, those celebratory moments for them is, it's worth it. It's part of our paycheck. And, but yeah, I would say those things that you mentioned and, you know, just the relationships.
I do have a fun question, Coach, before we get wrapped up and everything. Yeah. So, East Carolina, you're very familiar with the rivalry, Clemson, South Carolina. You're very familiar with the rivalry, Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Which is the bigger rivalry? What are you going with?
That's a great question. I'll throw this back at you. You know, I coached at West Point for 2 years, and playing Navy, like, I still get goosebumps thinking about playing them and wanting that alma mater being played last. because I've been asked that before. You know, Michigan, Ohio State was good, no question. But Army Navy's pretty special, at least to me. Clemson, South Carolina, I'm sure it's going to be pretty good too. You know, probably more people in attendance to watch us in those games as opposed to Michigan and Ohio State. Yeah, great program in South Carolina and great program at Clemson, and when those teams tee it up, I'm sure there'll be some electricity in the air.
Well, my wife is from South Carolina, and they're all huge Clemson fans. So
good.
I'm rooting for you guys.
Go Tigers.
That's right.
Go Tigers. Zane, you want to wrap it up for us, buddy?
Sure. Coach, it's been awesome having you on. You know, I don't think we have any more questions. So I've never wrapped it up before. So
I bet you want to wrap it up. I don't know what to say.
Job
to wrap it up.
Yeah, I don't ever wrap this up. I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, Coach, it was really fun reconnecting with you, Coach. I know it's been a few years since I saw you down scouting and in Fort Myers for Perfect Game. When I got to meet with you and talk to you, seeing you, you know, scouting all those kids. Very cool to reconnect, and really appreciate you taking the time out of the, you know, the super busy schedule because the season's right around the corner. So very, very cool of you to do this.
No problem. My pleasure. Again, thanks for reaching out to me and having me on. And if I can ever do anything in the future for you guys, let me know. Zach's got my cell and I'll be more than happy to help in any way I can. So I think it's really cool what you guys are doing with this. Again, just really cool to be a part of it. So thank you.
Thank you, Coach. And all right, Ty, can you tell us? Can you wrap this thing up and tell people where they can get more information about our show?
Absolutely. You can follow us on TikTok at Big League Dreaming. You can shoot us an email, bigleaguedreaming@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at BLDpod. That's at BLDpod. And go check us out on all the podcast platforms wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Thanks again, Coach.
Okay, thank you. Guys, have a good one. Oh.